Hello, I'm Karen McDonald. This is number 0164, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0164. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Stuart Claxton, who is a spokesperson for Guinness World Records. Their latest book, Guinness World Records 2013, is now out. This latest edition has an app that lets the book literally come to life in 3D. How does it work?
In the midst of the 300 pages from the book, you can hold your phone with the app over certain pages and quite literally three-dimensional, full-color, fully interactive renderings of the record breakers will emerge from the pages on your screen. For example, the great white shark, which is the largest predatory fish in the world, if you hold your device over that section of the book, you will see literally a great white shark swimming across the pages.
Steve Olscher is the author of Internet Profits. The world's leading experts reveal how to profit online.
I had the really great fortune to study under and work alongside and interview 25 of the world's leading experts who really pull back the curtain and share exactly what to do and how to do it in order to leverage the inordinate power of the internet that most of us just don't quite get.
Brett Christensen is the man behind the website hoaxslayer.com. He goes about uncovering internet and email hoaxes. Why do these hoaxes still even work today?
I think they work because people see it as an easy opportunity to get money or opportunities like jobs or whatever. So they're willing to give it a go. They think, oh, yeah, it's on the internet, I'll just go for it. And they possibly don't think it through too much.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0164, was Karen McDonald, the station manager and news director at Global News in Montreal, the other place that I work. So yes, that would make her my boss. Thank you very much, Karen, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program. The Stuff File Program is, of course, also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, at a conference in August, researchers from North Carolina State University demonstrated their latest technological advance in aiding first responders to peacetime and wartime disasters. Cockroaches. Yes, cockroaches. Outfitting Madagascar hissing cockroaches with electronic backpacks that include antennas, batteries, cameras, and microphones, the scientists hack the bug's nervous system to steer them remotely into the tiniest of openings, a crucial step towards finding survivors of earthquakes or bomb damage in densely built-up and populated areas. Said one researcher to ABC News, "Somewhere in the middle of tons of rubble, your kid is crying, and huge machines are not very efficient at finding him." Yes, well, technology marches on. You know, you always knew that God made all creatures for a reason. Up until now, we never knew the reason for the cockroach. Now, if we could just understand God's plan for the pigeon. Yeah. Anyway, thousands of farmers in the northeastern Indian state of Assam are growing the world's hottest chili peppers and selling them to the army to make weapons, according to London's The Guardian. One expert said a few drops of Bhut Jolakia could make you senseless. Blasting a container of it into a terrorist hideout, he said, would make them all drop their guns after just one breath. The stuff has also been used traditionally to repel elephant attacks. You know, somewhere in Atlanta, Georgia, there's got to be a rib and chicken wing joint that's looking to buy this stuff in bulk. Moving right along, because the words were not those ordinarily used by vandals keying a car's paint, Newcastle, England police looked immediately to a better educated vandal and arrested University of Newcastle professor Stephen Graham, who had been a prominent critic of neighborhood parking rules that allowed outsiders to use the few spaces on his street. Scratched into several outsiders' luxury cars' exteriors were words such as arbitrary and really wrong and very silly, as opposed to the usual crude vandal references to anatomy and maternal promiscuity. You know, it says something about a society when crime is elevated by verbal eloquence. Anyway, here are a couple of crimes that don't contain the usual suspects, unlike that last story, or I guess a lot like that last story, which also didn't contain the usual suspects. Number one, arrested in New York City in August on charges that he used a tiny camera in a folded-up newspaper to crudely peek up female subway riders' skirts, Dr. Adam Levinson, assistant professor at the prestigious Mount Sinai School of Medicine. Wow. And number two, arrested in Beverly Hills, California in July and charged with a string of vandalism incidents, such as shooting metal marbles from a slingshot at windows of dozens of businesses and homes, investment banker Michael Poré, age 58, of the Rodeo Drive office of UBS Financial Services. Again, a higher class of obnoxious criminals. Here you go. So let's go into the courtroom then with a couple of courtroom follies, shall we? Carl Funk, age 58, told Broward County, Florida judge John Hurley on a video feed from jail to the courtroom that he is innocent of the 7-year-old charges of trespassing and open alcoholic container counts, and that besides, he is now wheelchair-bound in pathetic medical condition and should be allowed to go home. The judge was skeptical, but finally, according to a South Florida Sun Sentinel report, he offered to fine Funk only $50 on the charges, and Funk agreed to plead guilty. "Good luck, Funk," said Judge Hurley. At that point, Funk rose from his wheelchair and quickly walked away, wrote the Sun Sentinel. Raising both hands, Judge Hurley declared, "He's been cured." You know, well, at least the judge has a sense of humor in this particular situation. But you know, I'm sure Carl will eventually discover that one day karma is going to bite him in the backside, and we'll all be waiting. And speaking of judges, Missouri Associate Circuit Judge Barbara Peebles was suspended in September and recommended for removal by the State Judicial Commission for various offenses, including being late for work and destroying a court document in order to avoid embarrassment. The most serious charge was that she allowed her clerk, and I'm doing air quotes here for clerk, Whitney Tyler, who was Peebles' personal friend and hairdresser, and apparently without any formal legal training whatsoever, to dispose of as many as 350 cases as Tyler saw fit. Said one lawyer, until the judge showed up, Tyler was the judge. Wow. I'm hoping there weren't serious cases involved, because, you know, hairdressers usually give you the chair. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Stuart Claxton is a spokesperson for Guinness World Records. Their latest book is Guinness World Records 2013, which is filled with new content and a free reality app that brings the book to life in 3D. Stuart joins us on the line right now from Toronto to talk about the book. Hi, Stuart.
Hello, Peter.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book, but I want to talk about that new app that I just talked about in the introduction that brings the life to the book to life in 3D. How exactly does that work?
Yes, we're thrilled to have it as part of the book this year, actually, because we're constantly striving to find, you know, new ways to bring record breaking to the readers and the public at large. It's very simple. You know, you can take your smartphone or your tablet. And all you need to do is just, you know, either go to the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store and download the app, which is Guinness World Records 2013, or quite simply just scan the QR code which is in the book itself, and this downloads an app. And what it essentially does is, you know, in the midst of the 300 pages from the book, you can hold your phone with the app over certain pages and quite literally three-dimensional, full-color, fully interactive renderings of the record breakers will emerge from the pages on your screen. For example, the great white shark, which is the largest predatory fish in the world, if you hold your device over that section of the book, you will see literally a great white shark swimming across the pages. If you go to the page which features the shortest man in the world, you will also see a completely life-size three-dimensional rendering of him as well, bearing in mind he's only 21 and a half inches tall. But the whole premise, quite literally, as you say, Peter, is to make the records come to life and as engaging as possible. So we're thrilled to be offering this in the new Guinness World Records book this year.
How large of an organization is the Guinness World Records? And the reason why I ask the question is I also work as a television news anchor, and I'm sure you're aware that newscasts across the globe always seem to have one story or another about someone who is about to or trying to break a record. And the story is always tagged with, and of course, people from Guinness have to authenticate that story. So how many people work for this organization, and how worldwide are you?
It's a great question, because as you say, the perception is we're everywhere all the time, and I wish it was so. It's funny, because we're actually a lean organization in terms of we are headquartered in London. There's about 70 people there. Next is our office in New York, but we also have offices all over the world, Germany, Japan, China, Australia, India, the Middle East, and so forth. It really is in response, as you say, just to the overwhelming interest in record breaking, which just does not seem to relent. We get about 50,000 inquiries a year from people all over the world vying for a spot in the Guinness World Records book. And it's completely free of charge. And, we can either turn up in person to adjudicate a record, or quite simply, we will send you guidelines and some criteria, and you can send in evidence as well, which will be reviewed and hopefully successful. So we try and be everywhere, but unfortunately we can't be. But there is a method to the madness, and we hope we're making things as easy as possible for everybody out there interested in record breaking.
Now, as you know, there are other people within a similar genre that you are in. For instance, the folks at Ripley's, and I've had them on the show as well. So I have to ask you the same question that I asked them, and that is, do you ever worry, especially in this day and age of YouTube and the world is becoming smaller with social networking and everyone can see everything, do you worry about people who try to do things just to get your attention, which in some cases might be dangerous to themselves?
It's an interesting question, because a lot, we have been referred to as, the original user content generators. Literally, this is all material produced by the public. So, I suppose my first response would be the fact that we're chronicling things that people are going to be doing anyway. The interesting thing for us, though, is that, every time anyone attempts a Guinness World Record or is interested in doing so, we always make sure that they contact us first. Every Guinness World Record that we have in our database, which is numbers about 40,000, has its own criteria, its own set of guidelines. And, as I say, these must always be omitted before you fully engage in attempting a Guinness World Record. I think by its very nature, the Guinness World Records is become, as you say, so very commonplace that it's referred to in sometimes in scenarios which we're not even involved in at all. But I think that the main thing for us is that whenever we do put our name by a Guinness or by a record or a superlative, it is as verified and as backed up as possible by us, which is what we're about. I mean, we wouldn't be around without the record breakers, and we owe it to them and everyone out there to make sure that when we say it's a Guinness World Record, it's 100% a Guinness World Record.
as you mentioned, thousands of people try to attempt various records on a yearly basis. Many succeed. So getting back to the book, which again is gorgeous, the Guinness World Records 2013, it must be a difficult editing process to decide what gets in and what doesn't.
Totally, totally. As I say, we have a database of 40,000 records from which our editorial team and others kind of make their selection from every year. The book itself has between 3,000 and 4,000 records, over 100 categories, 300 pages, totally, you know, full color images and so forth. But it is a tricky selection process. You know, what we always make sure is that, you know, not only do we have the classics in there, you know, the tallest man ever will always be Robert Wadlow at 8'11". You know, the oldest tree living will always be over 4,700 years old. Alongside those, by virtue of the fact that the record-breaking world keeps evolving, we also make sure that we're as up-to-date as possible. The book, it really is a reflection of the previous records, you know, from the previous 12 months. This year's, for example, book has a special section on social media, which of course is now, you know, commonplace, and now you can find out who holds the record for the most tweets per second, which is 25,088, or who has the most followers on Twitter, which is over 24 million, and so forth, just because this has become something which can be chronicled and monitored and measured. So we felt it owed its own special place in the Guinness World Records book.
And yet there's always room for the odd and the strange. Now, most people in a pair of underpants, really?
Yes, indeed. Sounds odd, but it's interesting because that is actually, in the UK, there is an organization called Pants to Poverty, and it's an organization which, you know, it aims to kind of resolve and highlight and bring attention to the issue of poverty, especially in inner city urban areas and whatnot. And just to do that, they pulled off a stunt whereby it was the most people within a single pair of underpants, which, just in case you want to try it, Peter, is 169. But it really was a way of just drawing attention not only to their cause, but also it gave them a way to just, you know, issue some messaging about, you know, just literally the problem of poverty, which blights certain areas of the country. But it's funny because sometimes behind the most madcap things, you'll see, or to do, you know, is to bring attention to a totally different cause. So yes, big pair of underpants, but worthy cause behind it.
And that brings me back to what I said earlier. As a television news anchor, we cover so many of these stories, and we see so many items around the world that deal with Guinness. And the thing that's always the common thread is that so many of these events take place to raise awareness or funds for a charity. And that really says something interesting about humanity, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact that people can rally around and come together, you know, around a Guinness World Record, some benefit to society, is always a bonus for us. And, you know, we would be, you know, it would be wrong for us to dismiss that as part of, you know, the facts of all these types of records. Because for us to be involved in any, you know, charity or any kind of cause is always very special. And we'll celebrate it as much as possible and support it along the way as well.
For you personally, what's the biggest interesting item or biggest surprise of the year as far as you're concerned? Something that caught you off guard?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I would have to say, I think the one thing that has stood out for me for many years is the shortest living man alive, just because it's always been of interest. It's always a bit of a classic Guinness World Record, but we seem to be finding smaller and smaller men, and I really was not expecting us to find another shortest man. I mean, we had a chap called Junwei Balawing, and he was 1 foot, 11 and a half inches, and he was from the Philippines. And I thought that was it. I mean, this is a small, mature man, and he's only just under 2 feet. But what are you going to know? But Chandra Badahur Dangi, who lives in Nepal, then suddenly breaks his record, and he stands at 1 foot 9.5 inches. So, truthfully, the human body is a wonder, and this was not what I was expecting in terms of celebrating Guinness record. I thought we'd have Junere for quite a while, but Chandra just swoops in and takes the Guinness World Record. The shortest living woman, just for reference, is a lady in India. Her name is Joyti. She's actually 2 feet, just over 2 feet tall. So, as I say, they're almost on a par there.
And at a time when, as a species, we're getting taller over generations.
Yes, I know. It's random. It's funny because at some point when we were chronicling the tallest and the shortest, at some point they were both from Nepal. So I don't know. It must be something in the water.
The book is called Guinness World Records 2013. Again, it's a gorgeous tome. And Stuart, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Not at all, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Stuart Claxton, spokesperson for Guinness World Records. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0164, and you'll find links to Guinness's website. You'll also find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Internet Profits, The World's Leading Experts Reveal How to Profit Online. Plus, we'll meet the guy behind the website Hoax Slayer. He's all the way in Australia. We'll go on the other side of the globe to speak to him. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. Plus, lots of Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program. Also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. And you know, Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and beyond, just about any mobile device that you've got. It's on demand and on the go, and there's over 10,000 shows you can listen to. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get back to the stuff. The University of Tennessee has suspended the Phi Kappa Alpha fraternity on campus while it investigates an incident. Now, frat brothers dropped off Alexander Broughton, age 20, at the hospital at 1:30 a.m., unconscious due to a blood alcohol level greater than 0.04%, a level considered potentially deadly. He recovered and has since been discharged. Now, Knoxville police investigators went to the frat house and discovered 3 other men unconscious. The cause? The frat brothers had set up rubber tubing to give each other alcohol enemas, which bypasses the liver's filters so they can get drunk faster. Yeah, now, okay, maybe it's because I'm not that much of a drinker, but is the idea of binge drinking to get drunk or to be drunk? Because this idea certainly bypasses the taste great, less filling theory. I mean, who sits around and comes up with these ideas? Is this a byproduct of higher education? Wow. And now we have three items that creatively find new uses for urine, since we seem to be going to the bodily function part of the program, apparently. Or as we like to call it, stories of people who are socially pissed off. Number one, Albert Sultan filed a lawsuit in August in New York City against his hard-charging former boss, real estate broker Jack Terzi, accusing Terzi of various workplace abuses, including, to make a point in front of coworkers, deliberately urinating on an item of Sultan's clothing. Nice. Item number two, Timothy Pays, age 22, was arrested in Boulder, Colorado in July based on an incident at Shooter's Grill and Bar, in which after being rejected by a woman, he later approached her and allegedly urinated on her leg. Nice. Australia's Illawarra District Rugby Union reported in July that it was investigating an unnamed Avondale player who had allegedly urinated all over his uniform pants during play so as to discourage his Vikings opponents from trying to tackle him. Nice. These are rare times when you root for someone else's bladder infection. That's all I'm saying here. Moving right along, July was especially active for bestiality arrests. Among them, Shane Walker, age 38, and his wife, Sarah, age 33, at a motel in Mesa, Arizona, where Sarah was supposedly planning to consummate her dream of sex with a German Shepherd. And for the sake of this story, we can assume that her dream was with a dog and not with a Bavarian who watches sheep. Cody Slaughter, age 22, of Yuma, Arizona, after an investigation revealed sex assaults against a dog, a horse, and a pig. Now, that's what you literally call playing the field. And Dana Kintz, age 28, pleaded guilty in St. Louis to performing sex acts on a dog belonging to her and her boyfriend, Sean Ingram, age 37. So, just how jealous is Sean? That's what I want to know. Moving right along, here's another odd story from a strange school. I'll start off with a quote. "We're Broncos fans ourselves," claims Roger Fiedler, spokesperson for Weld County, Colorado, District 6. "It has nothing to do with that. We're just wanting to set a consistent, solid example." That's his explanation for why the district has banned students from wearing football jerseys with the number 18 on them, the number worn by Denver Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning. "They told me I couldn't wear number 18 anymore because it's a gang number and I had to take it off," said a third grader. Other banned jersey numbers include 13, 14, 31, 41, and 81. Well, I guess number 69 is completely off the table then. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Michigan State University professor who stripped off his clothes in class was taken to hospital and not being charged with a crime, according to the school. The university said police received a call just after 1 p.m. about a man shouting in the hallway of the school's engineering building, and they soon discovered the man, a professor, had stripped all of his clothes off in front of his calculus class. MSU police responded and took the man, a university professor, into protective custody and transported him to a local hospital, the school said. No one was injured, and the professor is not being charged with a crime. Students described the professor, whose name was not released, as eccentric. I've known one or two university math teachers in my day, including one in my own family. They tend to snap after a while. I wonder what the equation for that is. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Steve Olscher is the author of a new book called Internet Profits, and that's profits spelled P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S. The full title is Internet Profits, The World's Leading Experts Reveal How to Profit Online. The second profit there is, of course, spelt the money-making way. Steve is on the line with us right now from Chicago. Hi, Steve.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So you've managed to bring together a lot of people who know their stuff when it comes to the internet or making money on the internet, about 25 experts, correct?
I have, yeah. I had the really just great fortune to study under and work alongside and interview 25 of the world's leading experts who really pulled back the curtain and shared exactly what to do and how to do it in order to leverage the inordinate power of the internet that most of us just don't quite get, me included.
Obviously, a lot of people make a lot of mistakes out there when it comes to the internet and trying to make money on the internet. Did you find that even though these 25 are experts, they themselves made some of those mistakes early on, especially considering they were kind of pioneers?
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of it. I myself am a pioneer. I mean, I've been online since 1993. We actually launched on CompuServe's electronic mall way back when, if you remember CompuServe. And so, you know, it's interesting how many of the traditional mistakes that most folks make, they made, I made, and the real difference is that they have opted to keep persevering and keep just pressing the gas to the floor and do what they got to do to overcome those mistakes. Some people call that failing forward, and I really like that term, and that's certainly been one of the mantras in my life. And certainly one of the mantras that you'll read in the stories of these folks who absolutely had to overcome significant obstacles to get where they are now.
Well, you bring up CompuServe. That brings back memories. I was a section leader on CompuServe oh so many years ago. So what is the difference now? And the reason why I bring that up is people of a certain age who were there kind of when the internet became big or started to become big kind of learn what to do and how to do it. You now have a generation, a younger generation, who for them the internet was always there. And I'm sure they handle it and deal with it in a different way and maybe even with relatively more ease than we did.
Well, I mean, look, there's something to be said for the generation that grows up with a mouse in their hand, and certainly, I don't know how old you are, but I mean, I didn't grow up that way. The internet is certainly a new phenomenon, at least over the last 20 years, as I've say with our initial launch on CompuServe. But at the same token, you know, the reality is that even those who have grown up now with the internet or the 20-somethings who really have made it an integral part of their life, I mean, they still, for the most part, leave a lot of low-hanging fruit there and don't really understand how people join the 1% who are killing it online. I mean, most of us just kind of finagle through it and have, you know, a few Twitter followers or maybe some Facebook fans or that kind of thing. But most businesses and most individuals still don't understand exactly what to do and how to leverage the power of the tools, technology, and strategies that are currently in place and available to all of us now that the playing field is leveled.
I am reminded, analogy-wise, of the gold rush. You had the major gold rushes that took place, and everybody went into the hills or into the mountains looking for gold. But the people who really made the most money during the gold rush were the people who sold pickaxes.
Hmm. Yeah, and blue jeans, right?
And
so,
blue
jeans. It's the same type of situation where you have a lot of people who have carved the path, and that's the beauty of it, is you don't have to recreate the wheel. You just have to paint it your own color. And now, I mean, it's really, you know, back in the day, if you copied what someone was doing, right, they would call it plagiarism. But today they call it modeling. And not modeling those who have been successful, I mean, really is quite foolish, because it only makes sense to do what works. And there are plenty of people out there who show you exactly what to do and how to do it. And this book, in fact, has been rated the number one book on web marketing now for over 8 weeks on Amazon, because that's exactly what it shows you.
So what is the biggest mistake people make when attempting to do business online, and has that mistake changed over the years?
Well, look, I think that what you're looking at is that fundamentally the way that the consumer interacts with the internet has changed very, very much so, even so in the last couple of years of social media has really taken a huge grasp on the way that we leverage and utilize the internet. But what most people get wrong, what most companies get wrong, and I'll throw this out as a little nugget, is that a website should really only do one of two things. And a website should either A, sell product, or B, capture opt-in information, which means name and email. And so many sites give you so many choices that the visitor becomes paralyzed. And you don't want to confuse the visitor. You want to give them one choice. And really, it's got to be either buying something very specific or opting in for more information.
Do you find that a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that the internet is someplace where people can get rich quick, as opposed to just using the internet as a tool to enhance a business you already have? In other words, not putting the cart before the horse?
Yeah, I mean, look, the reality is that you can make a lot of money online. So I don't want to sit here and downplay the fact that there are people who are making millions of dollars a year online and have done so consistently for the last decade. So, you know, the reality is, yeah, you can absolutely make a lot of money, but at the same token, you know, it's not that if you build it, they will come. It's if you know what you're doing and know how to market and know how to build your personal platform and corporate platform, they will come. And most people think you can just spend all this money on a site and amazing things are going to happen, and that's just not the case.
You've been at this game for a long time, like you mentioned. You're one of the pioneers yourself. Yet when putting this book together and talking to the 25 that you talked to for this book, what did you learn?
Well, number one, I learned that I got to give the book away for free. So I actually do give the book away for free. If you go to internetprofits.com/free, and again, that's profits, profits.com/free, you can grab a free copy. Because what I learned more than anything is that the Internet is not going to get you to the place you want to go immediately. The Internet, just like any other relationship, is about starting at square one, meeting someone, introducing them to who you are, introducing them to your products and services, and developing that relationship over time. Most people expect instant gratification and expect to make a ton of money, you know, within a short period of time, and that's just not the reality. People have to know you, like you, and trust you, and that's how you begin to profit online.
Did you have the opportunity to find out from any of the 25 what their biggest lesson to themselves has been in what they've learned over the years in using the Internet?
Yeah, you know, and certainly this holds true for almost any business in any industry. And what that is that you have to be willing to spend almost nothing in terms of marketing and creation and whatnot in order to test the waters and see if, in fact, there is an audience for what it is that you want to sell in terms of a product or service. Most people don't understand that you don't need dollar one to figure out if there's an audience for what you want to create. Most people spend thousands of dollars doing something only then to find out there's no audience for what they want. It's the inverse of how you need to go about it, and there's so many tools out there now that can help you create that sort of platform, create that sort of entity where you can figure out if, in fact, there is an opportunity for you to do what you want to do and then spend the money to develop it.
One of the terms I always hated way back in the day was the information superhighway, but I'll bring it up now because back when people used to use that term a lot, the information superhighway really wasn't paved. Now it really is. So now that it is there a problem that people traveling along it might be going too fast not to see what's on the side of the road, so to speak?
Well, I mean, look, that's the problem for most business owners, for most people for that matter, is you're so close to the forest you can't see the trees. And that's why sometimes, you know, it really behooves you to enroll others in what you're doing and say, hey, take a look at this. Am I going about this the right way? Am I leaving money on the table? What low-hanging fruit am I missing? What about my message, et cetera? And really get the feedback that you need in order to stay honest and in order to stay grounded. And people tend to move, as you said, right down that highway way too quickly and jump into action without really understanding if what they're doing, in fact, is effective and efficient.
It's a great concept, I believe, to come up with a book like this that talks to 25 of the world's leading internet, mobile, and marketing experts to learn from those who have been down this path what one needs to know to follow literally in their footsteps. The book is called Internet Profits, and you said, as you just mentioned a little while ago, that you can get the book for free. Explain that again.
Yeah, I give the book away for free at Internet Profits, again, profits.com/free. And you know, I'm not the only one who thinks it's a good book. I mean, I got to tell you, when J. Conrad Levinson, the guy, the legend who wrote Guerrilla Marketing, says that this is the best marketing book he's read in over 20 years, that's pretty flattering. So people love the book, and it'll definitely help you. And again, you get it for free. I mean, anything that helps you make a little bit of money is an exponential return on that investment.
Excellent. Steve, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me on.
Steve Olscher, author of Internet Profits, the world's leading experts reveal how to profit online. Again, you can get his book for free by going to internetprofits.com/free. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0164, and you'll find links to Steve's sites. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Frank Kelly served as a state attorney general longer than anyone in the history of the United States. During a 37-year career in Michigan, the lifelong Democrat created the country's first consumer protection division. His reputation as a consumer advocate helped him win 10 elections and the support of many trial lawyers. So, when Kelly retired and he was asked to speak to a large group of lawyers, he surprised many when he told them, and I quote, "There is too much litigation today. Too many lawyers think that lawsuits are a first resort when they should be a last resort." End of quote. His comments were reported in the newspaper the next day, and I have kept that article ever since. Let's be fair, I keep that article because his comments reveal, just like George McGovern's comments that I told you about last week, that support for ending the problem of excessive litigation in America is much more widespread than many may think. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the guy behind the website, hoaxslayer.com. And of course, there is indeed still an idiot of the day coming your way and more Stuff File news. And by the way, you can vote for this show for the first annual Stitcher Awards. You can nominate and vote for the best in on-demand radio across 20 different categories. Listeners can vote once a day for the next 2 weeks at Stitcher's site or on their Facebook page. All shows and podcasts available on Stitcher are eligible for consideration, and shows may be nominated in multiple award categories. Winners will be announced live at the Stitcher's Awards show in San Francisco at the end of the year. Just go to stitcher.com/stitcherawards. And oh, please remember, vote for the Stuff File program. Thank you very much. On to the Stuff File news. A German liquor manufacturer has released a special edition line of rum, vodka, and whiskey, which it guarantees to have been poured over a sexy model's bare breasts before it's bottled. Not convinced? G Spirits says every bottle comes with the model signature on a certificate of authenticity and a photo of the bombshell. To create the perfect taste, we let every single drop of our spirits run over the breasts of a special type of woman, the G Spirits website says. The creators said the unique idea was influenced by another vodka that's filtered through diamonds. After storing it in a bourbon cask for 10 years and 1 year in barrels of French oak, it is poured over Amina's breasts, which lends it a unique erotic character, the website says of its whiskey-making process. The booze makers say it adheres to health and safety regulations, and medical personnel are present. Sure. Images of half-naked models pouring booze on their breasts are pictured on its website, including model Alexa Varga, Hungary's 2012 Playmate of the Year. Bottles of G Spirits sell on its website for around $160. I believe the irony here is that I'm guessing the only people who would spend $160 for a bottle of this stuff would have to be real boobs. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Brett Christensen is a man behind the website hoaxslayer.com, a site that strives to help make the internet a safer, more pleasant, and more productive environment. Brett has been researching and writing about hoaxes and scams for years. Why does he do it? Well, we check in with him in Australia via Skype-to-Skype communication to find out why. Hello, Brett.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So why do you do it?
Well, it started when I got caught out by a hoax myself back in 2003. And someone pointed out that it was a hoax. So then I started researching emails and messages I got, and I got more and more interested in it. And the site grew from that, basically.
Mm. Now, there are two things here we're talking about. There are hoaxes and there are scams. Obviously, one is more, shall we say, destructive than the other, because a scam implies that somebody is trying to get something out of you under false pretenses. With the internet being as ubiquitous as it is and people are more savvy while using the internet, does it surprise you that scams are still out there the way they were before and they're still garnering attention?
Yes, it does surprise me a lot, actually. I thought would we get they'd start to fade away after a while, and people would become more aware of typical internet scams. But they're still much the same, really. The same scams are still happening all the time.
Why do you think they work?
I think they work because people see it as an easy opportunity to get money or opportunities like jobs or whatever. So they're willing to give it a go. They think, oh, yeah, it's on the internet. I'll just go for it. And they possibly don't think it through too much.
So how do you go about debunking email and internet hoaxes?
Well, there's a lot of places I research. Like often, if it's involving a company or a charity or something like that, there'll be information on that organization's website for a start. Sometimes I need to call people. There might be news articles pertaining to it. So it's just a matter of generally researching until I find some concrete information that I can provide in the article to more or less prove that it's a hoax as much as possible.
What do you see more of, a from the ground up scam that pops up out of nowhere, or somebody who's actually trying to piggyback on what is essentially a legitimate business and or venture of some kind?
Well, a lot of the scammers these days are piggybacking on big well-known companies like Microsoft or Google, and I think people believe it because the email or whatever comes in often with the company's logos and formatting, and they're familiar with the sort of color scheme or whatever that's being used by that company, so they're probably a lot more willing to believe it and go along with what they're saying. So yeah, I think more and more they're probably using the names of well-known entities, companies.
So how does, I mean, you're someone who you say you initially were scammed or fell for a hoax, and now you're somebody who goes out and finds these things. So what is the first tip, or what is the best tip that you can give people to educate themselves and protect themselves from being victims in one way, shape, or form?
Well, just before you click on a link or forward an email or a Facebook message or whatever, just sit back for a couple of minutes and think about it and check the logic of it. A lot of times they're quite transparent if you just think about it a little bit. You know, they're not all that hard to recognize if people think about it. I think one of the big problems with the internet is it's so easy to click a link or to forward an email or share a Facebook post without thinking about it too much. So I think that's probably the wisest thing people can do to protect themselves is just step back for a minute before they do anything, possibly take a few key words from the message and plug it into Google. They might find a site straight away that gives them information about whether it's a scam or a hoax or the things of that nature straight away. So it's just a matter of stepping back and taking it easy.
Not that I want to give any information that helps the scammers or hoaxers, but I'm finding it rather interesting that some of the things that I see coming and through the emails, and you mentioned things like social networking, like Facebook, for instance. When you see emails that say things like, I can't believe this picture of you is on the internet, or I can't believe what people are saying about you online, I can't believe people click on those. That's what I don't understand.
No, it is hard to understand sometimes, but I think people sometimes panic a bit. They think, oh my goodness, someone's put pictures of me up on the internet. I better have a look at this. So there's not a lot of due forethought. They're just clicking and having a look. And once they get to the scam website, it's often too late.
Now, when somebody goes to Hoax Slayer, what will they find? And conversely, what are some of the biggest concerns you see out there right now?
Well, if they go to the website, there's a search field at the top of virtually every page. So if they're looking for a certain hoax or scam, they can start there. Possibly, otherwise, there's categories down the side where they can hone in on different areas of the site. One of the biggest things we're fighting at the moment are these sick baby hoaxes on Facebook. I'm not sure whether you've heard of those, Peter, have you?
No, I haven't heard of that one. That's new to me.
Well, yeah, what they're doing is they'll take a photo from an old news article or something of a sick baby in the hospital, and they'll put it on Facebook and say, oh, this baby needs an operation. Every time you click like on the picture, Facebook or another company will donate a certain amount of money. It's just complete nonsense. And the only reason they're doing it is to amass large amounts of likes for their page.
Wow. So yeah, in this case, it's not something necessarily that's malicious, which is, I guess, I mean, there are hoaxes, and then there are, you know, hoaxes that do malicious things to, or try to do malicious things to your computer. This is just one that somebody wants to add up likes, right?
Yes and no. It is malicious in the sense that they're using pictures of real children, some of which have died in the meantime. So it's hugely distressing for the families of these children once they see these pictures of their babies being circulated in these ridiculous hoaxes. So it is quite malicious in a way.
Is there any way, like for instance, on behalf of the parents to stop this? What if a parent out there finds out that their deceased child is being used this way? What can they do?
Well, it is actually quite hard to do anything. This we've been sort of trying to get Facebook to take more action on these sort of hoaxes and get rid of them, and they have done a little bit, but for ordinary users, the best thing to do if you see one is report the picture to Facebook immediately, and quite often they will take it down.
One of the things, when somebody becomes a crusader in any way, shape, or form, like yourself, going out there with the website hoaxslayer.com, they become a target. Does this concern you? Has this been something that's happened to you in the past?
I do get a lot of abusive emails and Facebook messages and comments and things like that. That doesn't really worry me anymore. I just let it go over my head. But I haven't had any specific threats personally at this point. But it is a bit of a concern.
How long have you been doing this with the website hoaxslayer.com?
Well, I got started with it about 2003. Basically, it's just a Yahoo email group at first, and then I built a small website, and then it grew from there. So, yeah, since 2003.
Are you surprised by its success?
Yes, I am, actually. Yeah, it was only started as a hobby, really. And I'm quite pleased that it's grown to be a useful resource for people.
Where would you like to see it go in the future, and how would you like to grow even more to help people and keep people aware of what's going on out there online and via email?
Well, basically, the more articles I can publish, the more aware people will be of all these scams and hoaxes. So my goal is to, you know, continue to publish as much as possible, and possibly my young son's coming in to help me a little bit, so I might have him up writing as well shortly.
Have you? Go ahead.
Yeah, and I also have some fantastic people who help me with my Facebook page just off their own bat. They help me administrate the page, and they do a lot of great work for me as well.
Are you getting tips and information from people who go to your website and perhaps catch a hoax or two that maybe you are not even aware of? Do you get information from the general public that way?
Oh, definitely, yeah. In fact, one of the main ways I get alerted of new hoaxes or scams is because people submit them to me, either through my Facebook page or through email. So if I'm getting lots of submissions about one, that's what I tend to concentrate on and write an article about that, whatever they're discussing.
Mm-hmm. We should mention the website is hoaxslayer.com, and there's a dash in there between them, right? So it's hoax-slayer.com, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Brett, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. It's most important work that you do indeed. It's your hobby, as you say, but it's something that helps a lot of people, not just in Australia, but around the world.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Brett Christensen from hoaxslayer.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0164, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Police in Memphis say a red pickup truck inscribed with the words "meth lab" in the rear window turned out to be a meth lab. after being stopped for a license plate violation. And why do these guys always have some sort of license violation? Anyway, the driver was arrested for outstanding warrants and other meth-related charges. Hazmat crews later removed the chemicals from the truck. Okay, while there is a certain amount of moxie to have a mobile meth lab, why, for the love of God, would you have painted in big letters across the back and side windows the words meth lab, all in capitals? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0164. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0164. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.